This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Asia Pacific Currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to Asia Pacific Currents. This is our first show for 2015. It is Saturday the 7th of February, 9 o'clock on the dot. I'm Giselle Hanna.
And I'm Pierre Morrow. And it's great to be back, Giselle, isn't it? And although I'm here behind the panel, I'm thinking, oh, will I remember what to do here?
I know, but obviously, his skills are a bit rusty, listener. We apologise in advance.
Yes.
Of course, a special thank you to Solidarity Breakfast for yet another informative show. So thank you to the team. Coming up on today's show, Pierre.
Well, of course, Asia Pacific Currency is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links, and our phone number is 9663 7277. Our website is all the W's, aawl.org.au, and we've got a Facebook and Twitter site as well. But on today's show, we'll have the news roundup as usual, and then in the second half of the program, we'll have an interview with Max Lane, who's elected in Indonesian politics from Victoria Union, about the state of the workers' movement in Indonesia. So it'll be very much a bit of an overview, especially of the last 2 or 3 years when there's been a lot of actions and mobilizations by Indonesian workers, with millions of them in the street. But they'll probably be around 9:15. But Giselle, you know, some things don't change. So we both here, and you know, we haven't changed the format, have we? So
indeed,
far,
we haven't. It is worth noting, though, that the start of the year, the first couple of months of 2015, have been really tumultuous across the world in the labour movement. We've kept our Facebook and Twitter pages up to date with news and information from the region. We're not going to be able to get through all of it on air this morning. We'll just give you the most recent updates that we've got, but definitely worth going back and looking at it, particularly a strike of metal workers in Turkey, which is sitting at around 15,000 workers out on strike at the moment, and it's been declared illegal. We don't have time for that, but do check that
yes,
out.
Yes, we do. We have this a second news story.
Are you running that story this morning?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Comrades, how Pierre does not consult me.
No, it's actually more of
moving on. We're going to start with Australia, comrades. You just hang in there. We're going to start with a massive dispute here mostly in Victoria, but it's a national agreement. Coles Supermarkets and the SDA, the Shop Distributors and Allied Workers Union, have announced that they've agreed on a new enterprise agreement which will encompass all meat units and the truck drivers, despite the opposition of the meat workers and transport workers' unions. We understand that the proposed deal eventually eliminates most of the conditions for butchers, meat wrappers and cabinet attendants that have been fought for and won over decades. So it is worth asking why the SDA has agreed to strip away wages and conditions from the meat workers rather than proposing lifting the conditions and rates of shop attendants so that they get higher penalty rates and better conditions. The agreement reduces or eliminates penalty rates, meaning massive pay cuts. It introduces mandatory weekend work, which is currently voluntary. It reduces pay on sick leave. It eliminates rostered days off. And it removes adult rates for young meat packers and cabinet attenders. An absolute shocking deal, a sellout. We expect nothing more, really, from the SDA. However, it is a fight. It's a fight that the meat workers and the transport workers unions are fighting. They're asking shoppers to be concerned about this and to support workers' rights.
That's right. And there is usually another union in Australia. It's called Australia's Weakest Union. But I've always thought that they should have been named Australia's Second Weakest Union after the SDA. But anyway, it's good to see that you've got your cobwebs out of your mouth and brain there, Giselle.
The
vehicle had to be run in for a little bit, so it's fantastic to see, because now we actually talk about the Turkish metal workers. And as Giselle has let the cat out of the bag, but as listeners would know, she likes to be in the limelight all the time. But anyway, let's not go there. Giselle, your mic is off, by the way. At the end of January, an estimated 15,000 metal workers in Turkey began a campaign to achieve a better outcome than what has been offered by employers and the government in terms of wages and conditions. The campaign involves a series of industrial actions during the month of February across the country. The government, in response, has now passed a decree banning any strikes or industrial actions, as the government has declared that the metal workers' strike is prejudicial to national security. That's right, it's going on strike is against national security. Now, given the increasingly repressive environment in Turkey, as we talked about it very much in the last couple of years, the fight by these workers is going to be a tough one, and we certainly wish you all the best. And Giselle, hopefully we'll have an interview with them soon as well.
That's right. We've had some direct contact with the International Officer of DISC, which is the Labour Movement Federation, or the Union Federation in Turkey. And we'll hopefully have some more information. They are asking for solidarity, so we're going to put the call out once we know exactly what's happening with that dispute. Moving now to China. China's miners take a stand as coal production falls for the first time in 14 years. While environmentalists are hailing the drop in China's coal production last year, it's the country's miners who are feeling the immediate impact, with mines closing down and wages withheld for months on end. The China National Coal Association reported on the 23rd of January that domestic coal production was expected to fall by 2.5%, the first annual decline since 2000. Coal stocks at major power plants, meanwhile, increased by 17.1% to stand at about 100 million tonnes at the end of the year. In response, more and more miners have staged protests demanding payment of wages, social security and redundancy pay. And it's not just coal miners. Iron ore miners, who are also affected by the economic slowdown, have staged protests as well. Most of the recent protests appear to be at relatively small-scale mines, those worst hit by the economic slowdown and the decline in demand for coal. Definitely worth looking at and keeping our eye on that. We also know that China's coal mines are among the most dangerous in the world, so a lot of industrial issues facing those workers. And something that we as activists need to deal with when we're looking at an economy that's changing from the, you know, the insane absolute destruction of the environment and making sure that, you know, swathes of people don't die in that process.
That's right. That's right. Yes, we'll certainly keep abreast what's happening in China. Well, that really goes very well in a very, very tragic and sad way into the next story, Giselle, because we're now going to Bangladesh. And unfortunately, there's been another major fire in Bangladesh that has claimed many victims. Just last week, on the 31st of January, at least 13 workers died in a fire at the NEPCO factory, located in a building complex in a crowded market area of the capital, Dhaka. And it was actually a plastics factory. News reports indicate that fire precautions and exits were substandard, with many workers trapped inside during the fire and unable to escape. Many more were injured. While Bangladesh is known as a hub for the international garment industry, and of course we've talked a lot about on this program about that, in the last couple of decades, the plastic industry has also expanded and now employs around 1.5 million workers in Bangladesh. And one would have to think about the terrible working environment in there. Now, this latest massacre of workers in Bangladesh is only the latest of a string of disaster that once again highlights terrible health and safety conditions for workers in Bangladesh and the dire need for independent unions.
And moving now to Iran, as reported previously and last year, the situation for workers in Iran is very serious, with increasing cost of living pressures, stagnating wages and harsh repressive conditions hindering any independent organising. Nevertheless, recent events such as a strike by thousands of workers at an ore mine in the Baf region against privatisation have shown that workers are starting to regain some of their power. In January this year, thousands of workers in the auto sector from different companies have held a series of industrial actions over better paying conditions. The negotiations for most of these actions are still ongoing, and no serious repression of workers has yet been reported.
That's good news there, and we'll certainly hope the Iranian workers do start to organise in the future much more.
I think it's twofold. I think one aspect is the repression in Iran and the fact that Iranian workers are organising, but I think it also shows the absolute crisis in the car manufacturing industry that, Iran's organised workforce is so vehemently repressed, and thousands of those workers and leaders are in prison, yet the crisis is so intense that there's massive industrial action there.
That's right. And as our last item, and I have to be honest here, I made a slight mistake in my numbering, Giselle, so maybe I've got some cobwebs as well, because we actually jump back to Thailand now. I try to have the stories in a nice linear fashion for listeners. But anyway, so the situation for workers in Thailand has continued to deteriorate over the last few months while we've had a summer break, with further clamping down on civil liberties via the use of the Les Majestes law. In addition, the military is trying to intimidate any opposition politicians by ordering them to attend military barracks where they will be educated about the correctness of the military junta. Yes, in other words, they get big talking to for days and end if they have any criticism. In the latest step, the military has announced that it will merge the National Human Rights Commission into another body. The National Human Rights Commission had already been widely criticised internationally for not being very effective in the first place, but this latest move would represent another, a further downgrading for human rights in Thailand. And of course, Thailand is another place where there's a number of our comrades in jail, starting with Somyot.
It's 12 minutes past 9 o'clock. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents, the first one for the year, so thank you for enduring. We're going to go to some community announcements, and when we return, we'll be hearing that interview with Max.
RCR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au. Wasting time in the unemployment lines.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the nurses dispute in 1986 and the waterfront dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there, broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda chicken strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting, and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR, radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
It's just ticked over 14 past 9 o'clock here on your favourite community radio station, 3CR Radio, and you're listening to one of your favourite programs, Asia Pacific Currents, brought to you by Australasia Worker Links, bringing you all the labour news from the Asia Pacific region. As mentioned earlier in the program, I caught up with this week with Max Lane, who's a lecturer of Indonesian Politics at Victorian University. And we talked about the Indonesian labour movement, especially about the fact that over the last 3 years, there's been a big increase in labour mobilisations in Indonesia.
Can you tell us about the impact of the recent election of Jokowi on the working class movement in Indonesia?
I don't think there's going to be, there's no signs of any immediate or significant impact or difference between the Jokowi government and the previous government on labor, on issues that directly impinge on the labour movement, such as, you know, wages and conditions. If anything, there's a bit of a hardening of the position against, hardening of the position against wage rises and so on. But so far, it's basically really no change in terrain, although there was, you know, a lot did happen during the election campaign, which exposed the bankrupt character of most of the union leaderships. And I think struggles against the union leaderships or ways to get away from them will be a feature of the coming period.
That's interesting what you said, and I will get back to that point, because over the last few years, from outside observers, it would seem that the working class movement in Indonesia has shown great strength with massive mobilizations of millions of workers. What do you think the reason this is, if you say there's a lot of the leaders are bankrupt?
It's certainly true, 2012 and 2013 in particular, and to a certain extent last year, in November when the decision has to be made on raising the minimum wage, there have been very big waves of mobilisation, street protest mobilisations, demanding an increase in the minimum wage and also the end to labour hire practices. That's mainly been driven by one union confederation, although from time to time others have come on board, but relatively passively. And of course, that's the emergence of these quite big campaigns is reflection of the fact that probably you could say over the last 5 to 8 years, you had the emergence for the first time in decades, really, of a genuine independent trade unions emerging. You know, took about 10 years after the fall of the dictatorship for this process to really to get underway. And those unions during that 2010, 11, 12, 13 period waged these big campaigns to get wage increases, but always holding back from actually calling for strikes. So even though their terminology is strike, most of the mobilizations have been the end of shift or just before a shift. So not actually withdraw, only a small percentage of workers would actually have stopped work. But after the mobilization in 2013, the employers launched a quite savage fight back, mobilizing very large numbers of thugs, bringing the police, taking workers to court. And it's really in response to that that you can see the current union leadership's tactics, the most spectacular being that the leadership of the unions that actually have been heading up these campaigns during the last few years have sort of stepped back from and even more significantly during the election campaign through their weight behind the most right-wing anti-worker of the presidential candidates, General Prabowo.
Getting back to the unions themselves, and we'll look at the crystal ball in a couple of minutes, there also seems to be a lot of movement within unions with a lot of joining together and then also splitting. Is that because, as you said, the union movement has really taken quite a few years to regrow after the fall of the dictatorship?
Basically, yes. While most of these unions, you can sort of trace back the origin through various splits and reformations, you know, back some time, even to the Suharto period, I think it's more accurate to say that in reality, they're all really very new unions with very new leaderships, none really in reality more than 10 years old. And a lot of the factory units, the factories where workers have affiliated to this or that union or federation, sometimes only 1 or 2 or 3 years old. So it's not like you're dealing with, like in Australia or in a lot of, you know, the advanced capitalist countries, talking about unions have existed for 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 years, where loyalties and ties to specific unions have become entrenched. You're talking about a very new situation with very considerable fluidity, and where loyalty actually is more at the factory level than at the level of a trade union across several factories, let alone a federation or a confederation. So it is very fluid at the moment, and one can sense a steady accumulation of discontent with the union leaderships, but also but at the same time, not everyone is, there's also people being won over by the politics of these leaderships, so there's also a bit of a polarisation taking place amongst union members.
And I would assume from your comments that it'd be very hard if a national confederation of unions at this stage.
Well, to have a single national confederation, that's difficult to imagine. I mean, there are several confederations of unions now that do have national spread. Probably, I think, 4 or 5 union confederations that now have branches on most of the islands of the archipelago, or at least the ones where there's factories and so on. So it's already spread nationally, and most of the strikes, or not strikes, most of the days of protest around minimum wages have been national activities occurring in, you know, between 50 and 70 towns on the same day around the same issues right throughout the country.
In relation to the repression that you mentioned at last year's mobilisation that we did cover on this show last year, what are the echoes to the fact that, unfortunately, Indonesian history has got many instances of terrible repression of workers, and obviously, and not just the 65, 67 massacres? How do people see all that?
I wouldn't really use the word repression for what's happening in the contemporary period. It's more like, perhaps a more accurate would be harassment. So, you know, when strikes do happen, actually strikes are happening all the time. I should clarify this. Strikes are happening all the time, but they haven't been a feature of the big national November mobilizations, except 2014, where the sort of more militant sections of the union at the base, in defiance of the leaderships, got maybe half of the involved factories out on strike, another half didn't go out on strike. But it's more harassment. So thugs turn up outside of a factory before the workers get the chance to leave, so they can't leave. Or there'll be harassments of picket lines where there's, you know, might be 5 or 10 workers, so 30 or 40 thugs will turn up and harass them or bash them up and so on. But it's not repression in the sense it can't really stop any of the union organising or worker activity that's taking place. So it's this constant low-level harassment and response that's taking place all the time. That doesn't mean workers can end up in hospital if they're, and that's happened several times already as a result of the attacks by the thugs. But it's not systematic repression by the state at this point. It's more harassment mobilised by employers who will pay the local police to do it, or more frequently, actually, at this point, using the gangs of thugs.
Given that you've said that while there's been a big mobilisation, but only really last year were the called as a strike, so there were more strikes, how do you see it this year, the movement developing? Do you see that some of these tensions within union will actually boil over and new organisations or new alliances will be made, or it will sort of keep going as it's been so far?
I think there's no doubt whatsoever that you'll see new unions formed, at least to start with at the factory level. You'll see new alliances form, even between factories that belong to one confederation and factories that belong to another one that don't that are not necessarily in alliance or not necessarily working together concretely at the top level, but at the factory level, I'm sure we'll see more examples of shifting patterns of alliances amongst between individual factories. You get some new unions emerging at the factory level, at this factory or that factory, and then joining up. But I think the process, unless something unusual happens, something unpredictable happens, I think this process will be ongoing, but at a reasonably, won't be at a super fast pace. It'll be a rather steady pace during the current coming months. Under Indonesian labor law, it's quite feasible for a factory unit, like a delegates committee, we would call it here, I suppose, to disaffiliate from a union or the union they belong to and form another union. That's quite feasible under Indonesian labor law, but there's a lot of bureaucracy involved in actually carrying it out. And I think that's the main consideration that a lot of workers have at the moment. Some of them would like to move to another union or go on their own, but the bureaucracy involved in actually doing that is a bit scary to actually deal with that, so it's slowing the process. But I think it's inevitable that there'll be another period of realignments before we see a stabilizing out of the union map, assuming that in fact there is a stabilizing out. Could be fluid for some time yet.
Thank you for that, Max, and we'll certainly keep abreast with the developments in Indonesia, because like you've just described, it is very fluid, and while there's all new organisation, the workers are reorganising. So certainly thank you for your interview, and we'll certainly keep abreast of what's happening in Indonesia.
No worries. Bye.
Has your organisation been interviewed on 3CR?
Your band played live to air?
Have you heard your latest song?
Groups like yours can now become 3CR organisational subscribers.
Just $110 gets your organisation or group behind Melbourne's longest running activist radio station.
3CR gives access and training to communities traditionally denied a voice in the mainstream media.
Get online at 3cr.org.au or call 9419 8377 and become an organisational subscriber.
Show your love, 3CR. I want your love. I want your love.
And you were just listening to Max Lane, a lecturer in Indonesian politics at Victorian University, talking about the Indonesian labour movement and some of the pressures and some of the dynamics within it in the next over the last few years.
And in the closing minutes of the show, just want to announce some upcoming rallies that are really important and you should all try and get to if you can. The first one is an ACTU-organised demonstration for workers and unionists. It's on the 4th of March, Thursday the 4th of March.
It's Wednesday.
Sorry, Wednesday the 4th of March at Trades Hall at 10 o'clock. This is opposing the Abbott government's attacks on workers, the proposed review of workplace relations, particularly penalty rates and those sorts of things. So get out there on Wednesday the 4th of March at 10 o'clock, meeting at Trades Hall. The second thing that I want to announce is International Women's Day. This is being held on Sunday the 8th of March, actually on IWD this year. It's at 1 o'clock at the State Library. So make sure you get along to IWD as well.
And that's all that we have for today, and we'll certainly remind you of those rallies in the coming weeks. It's just on coming up to 29 past 9 o'clock. That's all from us. You've been listening to Asia Pacific Currents, brought to you every week by Australia Asia Worker Links. We'll be back next week. My name is Pierre Morrow.
I'm Giselle, and coming up next is Palestine Remembered.
You're listening to 3CR. This is Billy X. Jennings of the Black Panther Party. Power to the people.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.